listening to the Eric Metaxas Show. Our humble objective?
To change the world.
We aim to do it one person at a time, but we're happy to break that rule if you have friends. Broadcasting live in the heart of New York City, if New York City has a heart, but it does. And they're broadcasting from it right now.
The Eric Metaxas Show.
With your permanent guest host, Eric Metaxas.
Oh, hello. Thanks for joining us. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. We tape the show in New York City, and every now and again, I get particularly excited to tell everybody in the world what is happening in New York City, because it is the center of the world. And in many ways, if you think about the term the world in a biblical sense, that's bad. When we say it's the center of the world, it's like saying it's Egypt in the Old Testament. But God is doing amazing things in New York, and I always want to crow about it. So I have invited today two partners in crowing about what God is doing in New York, Jeremy Del Rio and Walter Sotelo. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
Did I even pronounce Sotelo correctly?
You pronounced it perfectly.
Where are you from? What kind of a name is?
I'm Colombian, actually. Most people confuse me as Italian or Indian. It all depends.
If you're Colombiano.
Colombiano.
Eres Colombiano.
Sí.
Okay, we could speak un poquitito de Spanish right here, you know, because I don't care.
Good.
Who cares? But, guys, where do I begin? First of all, Jeremy, I've known you for years. You have been a minister here in New York. Your father's minister here in New York. I just want to get the background because, you know, when people think of New York— there are many different New Yorks, but when I think of you, Jeremy, I'm thinking of the Lower East Side. You guys have been down there for a long time. People don't often talk about the Lower East Side. What is your story? What brings you to serve God in New York City?
So I've had the privilege of being raised by pastors, but very unconventional pastors.
Do your parents know about this?
They do know this, actually. Yeah. So there, back in 1982... they began Abounding Grace Ministries, inspired by a very literal interpretation of Romans 5:20, which says, "Where sin abounds, grace abounds more."
And where sin abounds, grace abounds more. So you're saying New York is a particularly sinful place?
Well,
yes, you are. Go ahead.
And specifically, back then, they asked the NYPD where the worst drug spots were in New York
in 1982. Okay. We got to explain. New York was very bad in 1980. That's about the bottom, I think, right?
Yeah, we're just a couple of years removed from the drop dead New York headline from Gerald Ford. And
well, but I'm saying as bad as that was, now in the 80s, you're coming up into the crack epidemic. So I really feel like that was a very bad time in New York. Yes. Anybody who remembers New York at that time was really bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And the police directed them to two corners in the Lower East Side of Manhattan that at the time were the heroin capital of the world. It's just before crack hit the market. And that's where we went. And so that's where I grew up in ministry. My first ministry experience, we were at a park doing street activity, and about 20 yards from where we were situated, a drug deal went bad and a guy got stabbed. I was 8 years old, the oldest of three brothers. My family was there. We witnessed the stabbing, and we were back out the next weekend doing the same kind of work. So that's the context.
Now, I want to ask your folks, before they went to the Lower East Side, where were they? In other words, where are they from?
So all of my grandparents immigrated and landed in Brooklyn. My parents met and fell in love in Brooklyn. They were living in Staten Island when I was born, on staff with a large church in Staten Island. But my father was a contractor professionally, but he felt called, my parents both did, as evangelists to their neighborhood. Not the uttermost parts of the world, but their own Jerusalem. And so that's how it all began. They didn't want to travel. They wanted to stay home. And their theory was that by loving well communities like the Lower East Side, we would experience God's grace in very tangible ways.
So when you say Lower East Side, you're talking around Tompkins Square Park. Is that the neck of the woods?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, just east of there, Avenue D, and it was and remains the main thoroughfare.
A lot of people don't know that there is an Avenue A, Avenue B, Avenue C, Avenue D. People just don't realize that at the lower part of Manhattan, the island bulges out. And that, you know, they added some extra avenues in there. But people, if somebody said, take me to Avenue B, a lot of people would say, I don't even know, there's an Avenue B. I've heard of Lexington. I've heard of Sixth Avenue. What's Avenue B? But it came to be called Alphabet City, right?
Right.
And Alphabet City, I remember in 1980, in the summer of 83, I was in the city that summer, and that neck of the woods was just known. It was drugs. I mean, basically, yeah. You know, Electric Avenue, you know, the whole, it was basically, it was extremely dangerous, extremely druggy. So that's when your parents decided that's where we want to go.
That's when they decided it. And it, frankly, it was still had a reputation in the 90s. When I went to law school at NYU, for a full year, my torts professor would create analogies based on if a law student wandered into Alphabet City and something bad happened, were they somehow contributorily negligent? And so the way he would introduce these theories of liability was to place an NYU student in Alphabet City.
Wow.
Not realizing that that was my neighborhood, and right. I was at the time an NYU student.
Well, it's just funny, too, because, you know, when I think a lot of times when I talk about what's happening in New York City and the Christian faith in New York City, you know, I'm thinking about Tim Keller's church. I'm thinking about it's there are so many New York cities. One of them is the sophisticated Manhattanite elite. Right. And then there's the rest of the city, which is most of the city by far. But, you know, when you think of that part of the city, you're thinking of the Bronx, you're thinking of Brooklyn. But but the idea that the Lower East Side, which is anybody can go there real quick. I mean, it's right, you know, it's not far, but that was for a long time a hub of crime and drugs and whatever. But so anyway, so your folks went right into the belly of the beast in 1982.
They sure did. And so that's where I grew up in ministry, got involved in youth ministry in the early 90s while in undergrad. Started a youth center and a housing project on Avenue D in 96 that was right across the street from a public K-8 school. And our relationship with that school is largely the inspiration for the work we do today as Thrive Collective, working in 100 public schools around the city.
Okay, so I want to say before we get to Walter, thrivecollective.org is the website.
Yes.
And that gets into what is happening. And so, Walter, let's get a little bit of your background before we jump into the work that you guys are doing.
Well, I originally from Colombia, as I mentioned, as we spoke a little bit.
You grew up in Colombia.
In Colombia, yes, until about the age of 12. And because of different circumstances, my father and mother had not lived together. They were divorced when I was 4. My father had some type of involvement that's still yet to be firmly confirmed with the cartel. He worked with Pablo Escobar. We know that he did that. And early in the 80s, he was kidnapped, and my mother, to try to rescue us, basically lied and said that we were going to come to Disney World for vacation. And in the meantime, she sold everything she owned.
Instead, you went to Six Flags.
Came to, not Six Flags, the Space Mountain. It was the trip.
Okay.
So I came to Miami, and in Miami, I got involved with gangs, you know, trying to deal with the pain of losing my father and, you know, not being aware that we're going to be coming to America. Just a very rough background. And my mom was a prayer warrior and just really sought for God and asked God to help her. I attempted suicide, and that kind of set her off to really pray. And finally, some believer at her job opened her mouth and said, come to church. She went to church, and she accepted the Lord and transformed her life.
So she was praying before she accepted
the Lord. She was praying,
yeah,
of course. As a Catholic, you pray. You pray and you pray and you pray, and you ask God and all the saints as a good Catholic to help you out.
So she knew enough to pray, but then she gets...
True. Kind of what he says of the centurion, that his alms and prayers were heard by God, what he says in Acts. So right after that, she asked me to go to church for Mother's Day. I had sworn myself to be an atheist. In that attempted suicide, I told God, if you don't appear on the window, I'm not going to live. And he didn't appear. And therefore, I attempted suicide. And my mom saved my life. So for Mother's Day 1990, she invited me to go to church. I thought it was going to be the last time I've ever
stepped. Mother's Day 1990, yes. Yeah. She invited you to go to church.
So I get to go there, and I'm expecting Roman Catholic, you know, cathedral type of location.
Right.
It was a warehouse in the middle of nowhere in Bird Road in Miami.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, what did you get into? I'm a Catholic. All of a sudden I told her that, you know, she was worshiping the devil.
Suddenly you're the Catholic,
I'm
right?
I'm the Catholic, yeah.
You're just a troublemaker.
I was.
Whatever people do, you argue against it. Like that. Okay,
yes.
We're going to be coming right back. Folks, we're talking about the Thrive Collective. Go to thrivecollective.org. Here's Johnny Cash.
From town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars. I'd search the honky-tonks and bars.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking about New York City.
That's right.
I'm in New York City, and I'm talking to two pastors in New York City with the Thrive Collective. Now, you guys focus on the arts and public school. I want to get into that. I don't want to end your story, Walter. So I'm talking to Jeremy Del Rio, Esquire, and Walter Sotelo, 1L.
1L.
1L, not Sotelo.
Yes. No.
Sotelo.
Sotelo.
So, Walter, you were just telling us your story. So you are dragged by your mother on Mother's Day, 1990.
Imagine bringing a gang member to church, and he's very disobedient and rebel. I didn't even take a shower. I smelled like alcohol. I made everything. My hair was long. My pants were down to my butt. I mean, every possible thing I could do to discourage my mother to take me to church. And there was this inner pull to be able to fulfill this gift as a, you know, good Spanish boy to say to mom, hey, this is a gift that I can give you. It doesn't cost me anything. I'm going to church and I hate it. Got to the church and everybody knew my name. They had been praying for me. They just were wonderful. There were no statues, no candles, just seats. And you do the church thing. You stand up and sit down as you sing and all of that. Pastor comes out, this Cuban guy, slick hair, and just starts screaming from Romans chapter 5 about how I'm a sinner and everybody's a sinner, how you've done wrong and all these things. And I just couldn't take it anymore. I lost it. I just screamed at my mother. I said, what did you do? What is this? Stopped everything there. And he came on and just looked at me, just started reading John 3:16, read the passage and stopped and read it again and said, take the word world out, which is what we're talking about here in New York City, the world.
Right.
And it says, put your name there. It says, for God so loved Walter. And it was the first time ever in my life even as a general Christian, Christian that would only go to church to mass on, you know, Christmas, that I really felt God meet me there. The interesting part of all of this coming to New York is the man that was preaching was the next drug dealer here in New York City in Washington Heights, another unknown neighborhood in Manhattan.
Washington Heights is another. You
it's
want some drogas, you can go up to.
Well, we don't advertise it like that now. It's a wonderful neighborhood.
Things
but
are
in the
changing.
80s, it was bad.
Things are changing, but that's right. Back then, Washington Heights was known.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
So this drug dealer was basically on a corner selling drugs in early 1979, and pastor came through and invited him to church.
This is the guy who's preaching
this
in
the
your
guy
face
that was preaching
in 1999.
To me. Yeah.
Okay.
And they go to a basement, and there's a man preaching the gospel on hell. His name is Tom Maharis, and he leads this man to the Lord, and 2 years later disciples him and sends him to the place that he wanted to go, which is the nearest place.
Hang on, just because I don't want to mix this up. No, what I'm saying is that, so in 1990, this guy's preaching in your face. It's okay.
Yeah.
And this guy is telling you his story.
He's telling me my story.
Okay, so this pastor, what was his name?
Michael Rodriguez.
Okay, so Michael Rodriguez is telling you that in 1979, he was
a drug dealer in New York City.
In Washington Heights.
Yes, correct.
Okay, and what happened to him?
On a Wednesday evening, he went to a service to a church, a little church in a basement, and he heard the gospel, and he got saved by a man named that was preaching, Reverend Tom Maharis.
Okay, now Tom Maharis is a friend of mine. He's Greek.
Yes.
So any Greeks in New York who are evangelical Christians are personal friends of mine.
Yes.
And all three of us get together.
Yeah.
It's
a little bit more than that.
But seriously, like that is, I'm a big fan of Tom Maharis. Yeah. He's an amazing guy. So keep going. Okay.
So he tells me the story and basically I'm like, okay, fantastic. Well, the wonderful thing is, you know, in life we always think that our individual choices really are just maybe not going anywhere. They're kind of like disconnected from the, you know, big picture of what's the destiny. And in my life personally, I can see a little bit of the threading that God does. Tom Maharis sent Michael to go preach the gospel and start a church in Miami. And then Michael sends me up to New York to go study the Bible. And a year later, a friend of mine tells me, your wife is coming. And he introduces me to Victoria Maharis, one of the daughters of Tom Maharis. 2 years later, we're married. So Tom Maharis is my grandfather in the faith, but my father-in-law in my life.
So Tom Maharis, who I call Dionysios Maharis.
Dionysios.
His name's a proper Greek name.
Proper Greek name.
Not this Tom. What's
Maharis,
Tom?
Maharis.
Don't
the
say
sword
Tom.
Of two edges.
Maharis. But he, so he ends up becoming your father-in-law.
My father-in-law, yes.
Wow.
And I was called to New York at that year. So I ended up in New York and I went back to Miami.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
You married the pastor's daughter. I love this.
I married the best woman in the world. I mean, she's fantastic. And he would say that, you know, he loves all his four daughters, but she has a special spirit of just peace, reconciliation, servanthood, compassion. Wow. I really, God is.
So this is crazy. This is good crazy God crazy stuff. I love this. Okay, mm-hmm. so you're in New York, and Jeremy, obviously, you've been in New York since you were a kid, your whole life. So when did you guys get together, and what is this Thrive Collective that we're talking about today?
So in the late 90s, we connected because we were both doing youth ministry.
Yes.
And so we began collaborating along with a number of other youth ministers on a variety of initiatives. I think the first one was actually a sports initiative, basketball tournaments. But we became friends and started to become very intentional about pulling youth workers together for the common purpose of reaching kids on the margins throughout the city. In 2005, I had the opportunity to co-chair the youth committee for the Billy Graham Crusade with Dimas Salaberrios. Walter and others were part
Dimas
of it.
Dimas has been on this show a bunch of times. Yep. He's another crazy guy, for God. I love it. I mean, but really, New
this
York,
is the new generation
it's
of crazy
amazing,
guys in New York.
But it's beautiful. Yeah. It really is beautiful. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So he and I co-chaired this committee. Walter was one of the leaders of that. And in the effort to promote Billy Graham's final crusade of his career,
yeah.
that happened to be in New York, our focus very much was to invite kids who were disconnected from churches to come and participate.
Right.
And so we came up with a school adoption strategy that was largely a marketing campaign for the crusade.
Yeah.
Along the way, though, God opened our eyes to some things that we should have known, like the mm-hmm. fact that there are 1.1 million public school students in New York City, the 10th largest city in America, fill our public schools every day. Three out of four of the graduates of the public schools are unprepared for college and careers.
Thank you to the public schools for that. I mean, really, it's amazing. When you say that, I mean, I just think there's two ways you can go. Right. One is get your kids the heck out of the public schools mm-hmm. and put them in a private school and favor school choice and school vouchers because your kids are important. And why should you let them struggle in that world, which is not preparing them? Or you can do what you guys are doing, which is come alongside the public schools and offer help. And that's what you're doing.
That's correct. So our focus was shifted as part of this initiative with Billy Graham. But coming out of that, really sought God, why did you show us some of these opportunities and things that we hadn't seen before? And in 2008, we launched an awareness campaign called 2020 Vision for Schools, which is the foundation for the work at Thrive Collective. The other pivot point was my younger brother, came to me that same summer of 2005, and he said, Jeremy, I'm tired that when kids finish our programs, so many of them cannot get a decent job. He said, if the gospel is good news for the poor, at the very least, somebody who meets Jesus should be able to find a good job. And his insight was that they struggled to get good employment because so many of them were bad at math. And his belief was that happened not because they couldn't do it, but they thought they didn't like it. And so his epiphany was to say, if I could teach math at that school across the street that sends all of our kids into our programs, fewer of them will hate math and they might actually get good enough at it.
Wow.
When he said that, it was a game changer for our ministry locally in the Lower East Side. It changed everything about how we saw the school, the opportunities to serve the school. With the crusade, we realized in hindsight, our approach was largely a fish poaching strategy. We were partnering with the school, not to make the school better, but to get kids into our event.
Right.
When my brother had that epiphany, it connected the dots for us that if we could begin to partner with the school in the way that salt makes whatever it penetrates taste better, right? If our legacy could be that schools and students would be more effective,
right,
that things could change. And that's what we experienced at PS 34 beginning in 2006.
Wow. So you have been in, now you're, that's the only school that you guys are in right now.
No. That was the launch school, the inspirational school. Now it's one of 100.
100? 100 schools in New York City?
Yes.
Holy cow. That's unbelievable.
I know.
You guys are in 100 schools in New York City? Okay. So to find out about you, go to thrivecollective.org. We're going to go to a break. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. My personal website is ericmetaxas.com. The radio website is metaxastalk.com. If you want to get on my weekly email, go to ericmetaxas.com. We send out a weekly email with a list of the programs and links and all that stuff. Okay, we're going to be right back talking about the Thrive Collective. Folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Jeremy Del Rio and Walter Sotelo, who are co-founders of the Thrive Collective. Is that right? You guys are co-founders of that?
Yes.
Okay. Of the Thrive Collective, that people can go to thrivecollective.org. So you guys are in 100 schools. I did not realize it was that big. So all across New York City, you are sprinkling salt and light into the public schools. Now, typically, you know, if you're politically conservative as I am, I feel like, okay, the public schools are a failure, so we need to have school choice, we need to have blah, 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 which I think is true. But there's another option, and the other option is to come alongside and to say, these kids are there, they're not going to a charter school, let's mm-hmm. help them now, because now is now. And that's what you guys are doing, but to the tune of 100 public schools. Now, how many public schools are there in New York City? There's got to be a ton.
There's 1,800 in the city.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're just scratching the surface.
Lean closer to the mic there. I don't want to miss you. Okay, so but still, 100 schools is outrageous. That's a lot of schools. So what do you have? Volunteers, I assume.
Right. In the 100 schools, we have partners that are doing a range of services, from sports and tutoring to school supply drives and all kinds of things. In addition to the work our partners do, we provide art education and school-based mentoring programs in 23 of the 100 schools.
So, and why do you do art-based education? What's the thought there?
That's a good question.
Because I think art is dumb.
Yeah.
No. No, I don't. I'm a writer.
Before I even became a Christian, come to New York, that's what I was doing in Miami. As a graffiti artist myself.
So you were a vandal.
It was art.
It was art, but you were defacing public property,
art.
Correct?
Well,
yes or no?
It's debatable. No, it's debatable.
It's debatable?
Yeah.
It's not debatable here. You're
debatable
a criminal.
Now.
Okay, so go ahead. So you have an arts background, and you decided, what was it that made you say in the public schools in New York City to do art-based stuff?
Go ahead.
As different as every school is, there were two dominant requests at every school.
Yeah.
One was help us recruit mentors, and two, help strengthen our art programs. What we learned later is the reason that was everywhere is because when budgets are cut in public education, the first thing to go are music and art programs.
Right.
And we were hearing the cry of the community
right.
as music teachers were being removed and visual arts. We learned in 2014 the scale of that. There are 419 public schools in New York City that lack a full-time art teacher of any kind. That's not just visual arts. That's music, dance, drama, anything. 419 schools service about a quarter of a million kids.
Okay, so now let me just cut to the chase. We have Mayor de Blasio. So I would want to say, Mayor de Blasio, this is on you. What do you do? Why is Mayor de Blasio not able to fund arts programs?
Well, in fairness, that was on Mayor Bloomberg. So Bloomberg's cuts resulted in the 419 circumstance. And in the last 2 years, there has been a renewed investment in arts education. But it hasn't yet hit the goal. And so part of what we've done this year is launch a campaign, Bring Art Back, specifically focused on those schools, because it's a perfectly solvable problem. In a place like New York, you go outside, you throw a rock, you're going to hit an artist.
Yeah.
You'll hit a musician, an actor, a filmmaker.
Not that you should want to do
that. That is kind of funny, because there's some artists I want to hit.
I knew he was going
to
go there.
I know. It's too easy, right? It's too easy. And there's some musicians that I like
to
throw stuff at as well. But you're right that in New York City, there are so many young artists. Yes. There's no doubt about it.
And it also happens to be an area that our faith communities can lead change around.
Yes.
Right? So I think, for example, of all the churches that have a music director, many of them are within a short walk of a school without a music teacher,
mm-hmm.
right? It becomes an obvious linkage to be able to expand our definition of music ministry to include creating an experience for kids to connect with their creator through music. And so that's been the effort, and that's why now we're in 23 schools with music, film, and visual arts programs.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are, you know, this is like crazy like a fox thinking. This is really, this is very creative, very strategic missions strategy to bring this kind of stuff into New York City. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
I mean, you've got to know how to do it, you know, and you've got to be willing to do it. But so what are you looking for right now? In other words, if somebody says to you, obviously every ministry needs money, that's huge. And everybody, I assume if people have money, they can go to thrivecollective.org and they can give money. But what else are you looking for? You're looking for mentors, for people to kind of partner with you. What do you need now to do what you're doing?
Yes, I think that from our perspective in New York City, we definitely need more mentors to be able to engage in the communities and in particular with the schools, but to also have that paradigm shift of not trying to fulfill your mission so much, but the mission of the school, which is to educate the child, which is such a simple thing, but we miss it as evangelicals at all the time. We ignore it. Looking at New York, I think that there is great opportunity also for the corporate world to be able to partner. I know we've had hundreds of volunteers come in and paint at our murals, and that's almost a no-brainer for any company to come in and say, hey, we want to volunteer and make the neighborhood beautiful.
Right.
Some of the things that we need are those things.
Well, corporate stuff is great because I remember my friend, maybe you guys know my friend Bob Mazakowski from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
a good friend of BJ Weber's. But, I mean, he got all these corporate bigwigs and banks to mentor kids in an after-school Little League program. And I thought it was brilliant because all these guys are looking to give back. And, you know, but they need somebody to make it happen. We're going to go to a break talking to Jeremy Del Rio and Walter Sotelo, New Yorkers. We'll be back to talk about the Thrive Collective in a minute. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. I could listen to Supertramp all day, but I have two friends here, and I want to talk to you guys. Now, I'm just reading on this. It says that of all the schools that where you're mentoring, that those who you mentor, the mentees, you have a 100% college acceptance rate. That does not seem possible.
It's possible.
Talk to the mic there. Sorry.
So last year.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. 2 years ago, we piloted a mentoring program with a ministry partner, New Canaan Society. We got...
I've heard of it.
Yes, I know. We had 18 business guys that committed a year to mentor kids. Last year, we replicated that not only at that school, but at two other schools. And last year, we had our first high school graduates from those programs, and they all were accepted to high school, into colleges, which is remarkable. It's a remarkable contrast to their peer group throughout the city.
People don't realize the boots on the ground effect. I mean, that there are – I always want to say this because you're never going to see this on the news. Christians who believe in Jesus Christ are selflessly giving of themselves all around the world to help people. They are not celebrated. They're not known. And we're talking about all kinds of ministries from, you know, the 700 Club. People always think, oh, I don't like Pat Roberts. Do you have any idea what they are making happen around the world to help people? And then right here in New York City, you guys are doing this. you know, again, it's not the kind of thing people don't hear about it. They only hear bad news about churches and religion and whatever. But this is astounding. And I guess I want to throw this out there to people. If you're looking for something to do to give back and you're in the New York area, you know, this is tremendous. This is, you are helping kids, and it's unknown, but God sees it. Let me put it that way. So yes.
Thank you so much.
No, but it's huge. I want to get these stories out there. I want to let people know what is happening, because again, you're not going to hear this on your typical radio program or on your typical TV program. They, you know, people just don't know that motivated by faith in Jesus, a lot of good is happening. It's typically not noticed or celebrated or broadcast. So I want to thank you guys for being a big part of it. But this is tremendous. Now what are the programs in the few minutes we have left that you're doing, and what kind of help are you looking for?
So right now, our core programs, we place teaching artists in schools who teach music, visual arts, and film. Typically, those are semester-long classes that are taught for academic credit during the day or as after-school enrichment. All of the curriculum is aligned with the various standards. And we've also aligned every art skill with a life skill. Why? Because we know that most of our students are not going to be professional muralists, for example, but every one of them have the responsibility and opportunity to create a life. And so we want them to walk out of the experience with a reference point for the beauty that results when they see beyond their circumstances to make something that lasts. All of those are project-based kinds of experiences. So the easiest example, in the visual arts last year, we taught visual arts at 18 schools. We had 2,800 students who produced 7,000 square feet of public art in the form of 15 murals. In addition to that, we had 800 community volunteers that worked with them in the production of those murals. Those murals, when they're completed, they serve as an ongoing reminder of what's possible. They elevate the bar of possibility, and they generate a sense of pride and goodwill in the community. And the thing that
these are legal murals, not like what Walter was doing down in Miami, like the facing buildings
I never got to do murals, right?
Okay, I just want to be clear. This is legal
I'm
artwork.
I'm glad I'm giving you you know, food for thought.
That's right. You know, because Walter, man, you know, you gotta. Okay, but so this is so you got 15 murals, but it must be just on a whole bunch of levels, because I think part of the problem a lot of times with Christians is that we think in very very hyper rationalist enlightenment ways, right? So we have to kind of take everything and put it in its little box, like how many souls got saved or how many times was Jesus mentioned or how many. But this is more holistic, right?
This is long term. This is we're not here for the 1 year, 2 years. This is a vision of a lifetime. This is where you reside in the city. You set your roots. You have babies. You raise babies, and you seek to transform the city in an intergenerational manner. So what we're saying is just partnering with the Babylon that's here, the city that's here, and we love it. I love New York City, and my family loves it. We love it, obviously. And we love the public schools, because there are many public schools doing great work and many teachers, and we want to come alongside and lift them up and really collaborate. We don't want to see another child going to prison. You know, when you laugh at me saying that I was a graffiti, rebel or vandal, the reality is that was the only form of escape that I had in the circumstances I was living in Miami, that I could express what was inside of
Jeremy, now he's making excuses. All right, I know, I'm teasing you.
This is the gospelization of my life, right?
You're right, right. No, but it is interesting that somebody would want it. Well, look, because there's graffiti and there's graffiti. There's just people just tagging stuff, which to me is vandalism. You're just making it ugly. But there is gorgeous art.
Yes.
And one of our friends, we've had him on this program, was a graffiti artist. What's that?
Mr. Popa.
You know Albert?
Albert, yes.
Albert Popa has done some of the most beautiful work that I have ever seen. And he started out as a rebel graffiti artist. So, you know, I'm joking.
I've been asking him to join us for a long time to help us out. So
to date, our students have completed about 40 murals at schools all over the city. The full portfolio is on the website at thrivecollective.org.
On the website?
Really? The website.
You can see the murals on the website? So thrivecollective.org. Okay, we're going to be back just for a few more minutes. The time flies. I knew this would happen. This is once you get like relatives of Tom Harris on the show, it's going to get crazy up in here, right? I just want to say one more time, the website is thrivecollective.org. I don't want to forget. And what will people find when they go there?
They can find the portfolio or projects, right. Ways to get involved.
Okay.
It's all pretty well laid out.
To find out what God is doing
Steps
in New York City. I'm just so thrilled.
That.
Okay, folks, we're gonna be right back. It's Eric Metaxas Show. Our website's MetaxasTalk.com.
Hallelujah, bye and bye. I'll fly away. When
make like Mr. Milquetoast, you'll get shut out. Make like Mr. Meek, and you'll get cut out. Make like the little lamb, and wham, you're shorn. I tell you, chum, it's time to come blow your horn.
Hey, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's Frank Sinatra. I'm talking to the founders of the Thrive Collective, Jeremy Del Rio and Walter Sotelo. The time just flies. Jeremy, what is the theological thinking behind everything you're doing?
The first revelation of God in Scripture is not Savior, Lord, love, or justice. It's artist. In the beginning, God created. The foundation, that first chapter in Genesis, not only paints the picture of God the artist, but it talks about how he creates collaboratively. Let us create man in our image and likeness. And then he empowers us to do the same thing, right? Because we're made in his image and likeness, he then tells us to be fruitful and multiply. And that doesn't happen in isolation. It happens because of collaboration and partnership. When budgets are cut and kids are not empowered to have those experiences that awaken their creative imago Dei, they're robbed of those experiences, mm-hmm. those opportunities. And so by re-injecting art back into schools, we create the platform for them to encounter their creator, to do it collaboratively in partnership with each other, as well as with believers and artists and mentors that see their imago Dei and create the space for it to thrive. That's ultimately why we're doing arts education. And we see it happen all the time when those light bulb moments go off. Mm-hmm. And when kids who may never become a professional musician recognize their creative capacity to see beyond their circumstances, that's when the seeds of hope really take root and flourish.
Wow.
Well said, huh?
That's pretty good.
He's a good man.
He's ready to go professional with this stuff. You're ready to bust it out. No, this is great. Now, I assume that in public schools, you're not allowed to talk about God or Jesus. I mean, how do you finesse that? Because that's who you are.
So the only name God calls himself in Scripture is I Am.
Yeah.
It also happens to be the only name he shares with us. Every kid in public schools and everywhere is figuring out their identity. They're asking, who am I? Right? And so by injecting these opportunities for them to do that, they're discovering who God made them to be. So you're right. We don't over-spiritualize the discussion.
Right.
But by allowing them to recognize that I am perfectly created for my unique purpose and destiny, they're being given the opportunity to discover the one who created them.
P.S. Jesus loves you. Just so happens. P.S. Jesus loves you. Okay, so we have like less than a minute. What are you guys working on right now? What is happening?
Wow.
The Bring Art Back campaign.
Campaign, yeah.
We launched it officially on Giving Tuesday. It's a 3-year campaign to bring art back to those 419 schools. We're excited about it. We're seeing the movement, the artists that are connecting. Last year, we had 8 very high-profile artists who worked alongside of our 20 teaching artists to make something beautiful happen, and we're looking for that to continue to grow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. That music means we're out of time. Guys, this is a huge blessing. Jeremy Del Rio, Walter Sotelo, thank you for being my guests.
Thank you.
And don't forget to say hello to Tom Maharis, the Greek evangelical from Washington Heights.
Thessaloniki.
Thessaloniki, bravo. Guys, thank you so much. Folks, that's the program. Visit our website, ericmetaxas.com and metaxastalk.com.